On the next Fresh Air, Carol Burnett, this year's recipient of the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. The award ceremony will be broadcast Sunday on PBS. Burnett was the first woman to host her own variety show, but early in her career at a talent show audition,
the MC came out and he said, "You're very good, dear, but you're too loud for TV."
Join us.
I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we are going to talk about children who are chosen and about the families who choose them. We are going to talk about adoption. We're going to talk about the joys, the grief, the challenges, and the opportunities. My guests will be Sandy Caesar of the Indiana Department of Child Services, Shannon Brannick of the Children's Bureau of Indianapolis, and adoptive mother Karen Sauer. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about adoption. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Sandy Caesar with the Indiana Department of Child Services. Sandy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. We also have with us Shannon Brannick of the Children's Bureau of Indianapolis. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
It's good to have you here as well. And Karen Sauer, who is an adoptive mom. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have all of you here. Well, I'm going to start. Sandy, I'll start with you. Could you give me an overview on what the adoption picture is in Indiana right now? Is there a shortage of parents or children or some such? Just get us started. Give us a sort of a broad picture, and then we'll drill down.
Okay. Well, I'd like to start actually with National Adoption Month, which is why we're here today and why we are actually doing a number of different adoption events across the state. National Adoption Month was started as an adoption week by Michael Dukakis back in the 70s for the state of Massachusetts, later turned into National Adoption Week by President Reagan, and then President Clinton actually expanded it to a National Adoption Month. Mm-hmm. So activities do go on at both a national and a local level. And here in Indiana, DCS, we actually partner with Shannon with Children's Bureau to host events all across the state in recognition of this. Mm-hmm. The original idea, which we carry forward to today, is to bring awareness to the need for adoptive parents for children, specifically in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Finding homes for children in foster care has different challenges than the kind of adoption that people typically think of. When families make the decision to adopt, they are thinking about infants and starting a family.
Mm-hmm.
Children in foster care obviously are there because they have come out of some situation of abuse or neglect. They've not been able to be reunified with their parents, or at the point that we would need to find an adoptive family with them, not able to reunify with any member of their family. And so we recruit for them, actively try to find a home. DCS is currently actively recruiting for about 75 to 100 children.
Mm-hmm.
There are greater numbers than that of children who are waiting in our system, but because most do get adopted by a relative or their current foster placement, the number that we have to go out and seek families for is that's about 75-200 on average. And like I said, the challenges are different. I would say even the challenges are greater than trying to find a home for an infant because, again, these children have come out of traumatic situations, not only the abuse and neglect that they suffered, but then they were removed from their home.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been the thing that saved their life. That certainly was our intent. But it still traumatizes a child to have to leave their home, their neighborhood, the things that they know. And so they go in. They are in foster care and into these homes of prospective adoptive families or their foster homes with a lot of times behavior issues, learning disabilities that may result from the early trauma. So it becomes more challenging.
Shannon, what are the qualities? I'm going to ask you kind of to set us up a little bit for Karen's story. What are the qualities that make a good adoptive parent? In that process, what do you look for? What should we be considering when we're talking about?
Well, what I tell people all the time is that there is no such thing as a perfect parent.
Anyone who's raised children knows that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But first and foremost, I think a willingness to open to your heart to a child that is in need and deserving of a family. Certainly when you're considering special needs adoption, which is how we refer to adoption from the foster care system, somebody who is willing to have an understanding and of the impacts of trauma and the challenges that this child may be experiencing because you're going to need to be able to work through some of those challenges. It requires a lot of patience. It requires a lot of love. I think that parents have to be willing to work as a part of a team because they need to be able to work with their child's school, with their child's therapist, with their child's caseworker to really try to bring together so that the child can have services to help them grow, to help them heal from the trauma that they have experienced. And then just a community of support, your own family and friends, people that are going to come alongside this adoption journey with you.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Karen, talk to me like a mom here. Tell me about your child.
I actually have two from DCS Foster Care. They are both 13.
Okay. Tell me about them.
They are not related by blood, only by me now.
Okay.
Nev is 13. She is amazing. Mm-hmm. She came to my house when she was 11, and I adopted her when she was 11, right before she turned 12. And then I brought in my son, and his adoption was final in February of this year.
What made you decide you wanted to adopt?
You know what? I read a magazine article, I think when I was 12 or 13, about how the kids in the foster care system age out and they have no one. And I just felt that I was extremely blessed with a close-knit family, and I wanted to share that with them. So I just always knew I wanted to do adoption of older children.
And why these two children?
You know what? I think I met Dustin at an adoption event where that they had around the state, and just something clicked with him. I just saw him, and actually I went there for a girl. I figured being a single mother, I needed a girl, and I could relate better to a girl, but, you know, my plan A is not God's plan A. Mm-hmm. And something about this little boy, just I went home thinking, I have to have a boy, and that's going to be my son. And 3 years later, he was my son.
How long, you say 3 years later, how long a process was it for you from the moment you said, okay, I want to adopt, to the moment where, okay, we're a family now, officially? I realize probably emotionally it happened a little before you got the paperwork signed. But
yeah, you take classes a little bit. Children's Bureau has a really great program of classes and where you can learn information and what you're going to be going through. So that was about 6 months. And then finding a child. I mean, it's not like going to the grocery store and saying, I'll take this name brand child over this brand. You have to see, hey, what kind of child can I handle? I'm a single mother, so I have to be aware that there are certain challenges I can't do by myself. And I have to keep that in mind. So you kind of look and see what child will meet with you. You meet with the kids and, you know, really just kind of delve into it. Nev was a little bit quicker. She was available. She wanted this. I wanted this as well. And I wanted Dustin to have a sibling. And I wanted her to have a sibling.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I was wondering about in the foster care system. I've talked with people, in particular, one lady who is a foster parent, who said that there are so many regulations and rules to fostering that it inhibits people from becoming foster parents. She talked about, like, random inspections and a big manual full of rules that they have to follow. And I was just wondering if that was true, and if anything's being done to address it. I mean, are there kids that don't get foster families even because of this lack of foster parents, or what's that?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jennifer. We'll try to get an answer for you. Well,
thank you.
Sandy, how about if we start with you on that one?
I will say that I am not in the licensing department, so I will keep my responses general to what I do know. But certainly there are rules. Mm-hmm. There are requirements. Karen spoke about going through training classes. You have to go through training classes to become a foster parent. There is a home check process. There is a home study process where people will, it's usually, you know, three visits. It depends on what kinds of things come up in your discussion with your social worker. But that's not meant to be
Well, presumably, I would think that part of the, and Shannon, you can jump in here, the rules and regulations aren't, I would guess, aren't designed to thwart foster parents as much
absolutely.
As they are to protect children.
Absolutely.
Is
mm-hmm.
that the case, Shannon?
Yeah, absolutely. Any foster parent would need to be able to pass background checks, which is for the protection of children. The process to become a licensed foster parent really is a partnership, because it's about us as the agency getting to know foster parents so that we can help make an appropriate match to know what kind of child would be a good fit for your family based on the characteristics of your family, based on, the ages of maybe other children in your home, your experience with certain types of challenges. But it's also, you know, for the foster parents to become more educated about the process, the challenges that they might face. Karen spoke about training classes. There is a curriculum that foster parents go through to give them more education on the foster care system itself, on parenting children that have experienced trauma. And so, you know, all of that is there to really better prepare foster parents for the journey that they're about to start.
Given that a lot of these children do come to the foster care system with some wounds that probably need to be healed, how do you train parents to prepare prospective parents? I mean, I'm presuming, Karen, in your case, you hadn't been a parent before this experience, right? So, and all of us have to come to it to some degree with that experience. How do you train them, Shannon?
Well, there is a classroom training component where we provide just some basic education about, in general, the impacts of trauma, how trauma impacts the way that children develop, that it might, you know, cause some developmental delays, that it might cause children to have difficulty in relationships, because parenting a child that has experienced these things is going to be different than parenting a child that you might have raised from birth. And so that, you know, that classroom training component is really important. But then hopefully then there's also a partnership with a social worker that's going to be able to do some more specific education with that family. I think that foster parents forming a community, maybe attending support groups or things like that before they ever have a child placed in their home, can be invaluable, because you are going to get the best education from somebody who's already walked the walk.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Karen, in terms of the training, did you had to go through something like that, I presume? Or
mm-hmm.
What was the most valuable part of that?
That I wasn't alone, I think, was one of the biggest things. You learned that there are other families that were going through the same things as you. Like Children's Bureau was there for my help. DCS, even the caseworkers, offered a lot of help. So it was just really nice to know that, hey, I wasn't crazy and doing this on my own. I really had a community out there.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. If you have a story to share about adoption or a question to ask, this would be the show to do it on. My guests are Sandy Caesar of the Indiana Department of Child Services, Shannon Brannick of Children's Bureau of Indianapolis, and Karen Sauer, an adoptive mom. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about adoption. My guests are Sandy Caesar with the Indiana Department of Child Services, Shannon Brannick, Children's Bureau of Indianapolis, and Karen Sauer, who is an adoptive mom. Mark, welcome to the program.
Yes. Good afternoon to the host and all the guests there. My question is that I would like to know how would affect, because it seems to me that a lot of these agencies are adopting in same sex and for parenting as opposed to the traditional way of parenting. And I would like to know how would that, or first of all, do you believe that that will have an effect on that child being in a traditional setting? And what about if that child, you know, look at the situation of the same sex parenting and them being reared by that and them growing up and not wanting or choosing to live that lifestyle? I would like to know how, or do you feel that that will allow the child to come out more worse off than what they are?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Mark. Well, if we're talking about the question really is non-traditional families, Shannon, is there research that shows how children progress when they are adopted into different kinds of family situations? We'll broaden it. I think Mark was referring to same-sex couples, but you also have single parents and all of that that don't necessarily meet the traditional family. Is there data we can pull on that?
I don't know that I have research or data at my fingertips. I can only speak experientially that I've seen a lot of different types of families, single parents, same-sex couples, two-parent households that have really successful adoption stories. I think that what children need first and foremost is a committed, loving parent or parents. And I think that if the child feels that commitment that from their parents and that love, that that's what's most important.
And I've been remiss. I probably should do a disclosure here that a few years ago when I was the executive director of what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, I was part of the fight to keep Indiana from banning same-sex parents from adopting or serving as foster parents to change Indiana law. So I just want the audience to know that. Karen, in terms of your experience with your children, is it any different? Let me take it a step back. What kinds of situations did they come from before they got to you, before you were able to form your family with them?
Both Nev and Dustin were taken from their parents or their situations because of neglect and abuse. It didn't work out. The people were not able to take care of them. And they had been in several different foster homes, and then they came to mine. Dustin's did take a little bit longer because I am a single female. Mm-hmm. There were people that felt that the kids should have a mom and a dad. I'm under the belief that why are you going to let them age out with no one if I'm sitting here with three bedrooms and a place and a heart and a home that's willing to take them? And so I just continued to fight for them and said, you know, you're worth it. Whether it's just me or anybody else, you're worth fighting for, and I'm going to have you as part of my family. And I fought for them.
What did, in terms of building that family and building that family structure, and I'm projecting, I'm going to ask either Sandy or Shannon to step in and, you know, correct me if I say something that's outrageously idiotic here when it comes to child development or anything like that. But I would think that children coming out of that situation are going to have some trust issues.
Yes.
They're going to have, they're going to wall themselves off from, you know, even accepting something like that. I want you. I can't trust that. I really, you know, I've heard that before. I can't trust it. How do you get past that as their mom, Karen?
You just keep reinforcing. While I was fighting for Dustin, he would say, when he would see me, are you still fighting for me? And I would be like, yes, I am. I can't make you a promise that you will be part of my family, but I will give it the fight that I have and everything that I have there. And then even now, to this day, we still do struggle with some of that. But
in what ways?
Dustin has a lot of anger. He has a lot of hurt because of the fact that he has been in several different placements. He was taken from his family. He doesn't know how to express it a lot. So he is acting out in school a little. Every once in a while when he acts out, we have a problem. And I'm right there at the school with him. Hey, Dustin, this is not how we act. This is not how we behave, but I'm still here. You know, you're still part of the family. I'm not sending you away. I just have to keep reinforcing that. You know, we've signed the papers. We are a family now.
How do you structure those conversations with him? I mean, when...
You know, you structure them like anybody else. Sometimes it's, Dustin, I love you. Sometimes it's like, Dustin, I love you type thing. You know, it just goes like anybody else would have it. I mean, I don't think that there's any difference there. I will tell you, since I knew I was going to do this, I built a big network, family and friends. But I didn't discuss it right away. And when I finally told my mom I was going to adopt older children, her response to me was, no, you need to get a baby. Mm-hmm. What if you get a bad one? And my response to her was, I looked her straight in the face and said, you gave birth to my sister, so what's the difference? You know, there are no bad...
Like, are we going to get a call from your sister now?
No. You know, but it's like, there are no bad kids. Yeah. There are kids that were taught bad things from these experiences that they have had. And I think that love and commitment can do a lot for these kids.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I adopted my two children in Michigan, where I actually live. But certainly the process, as you're talking a minute ago, the process where you have to be vetted to make sure you're going to be a proper parent was one of the most difficult that I've been through of people coming into my life, coming into my house, judging whether or not I would be fit to be a parent. I mean, it was just a very difficult, very heart-wrenching process for these people to go, for the adoption agency to come in and say, well, yes, you might be a good parent. Yes, you're, or maybe what if they would say no? I mean, it was just a very difficult process to go through. And we've had a number of friends who have also gone through, that process and just that trauma of someone coming in and judging you was just extremely difficult.
Thanks very much for the call, and thank you for sharing with us, Patrick. Sandy.
If I can say, this is, I was an adoption social worker in Ohio before I came to Indiana. And so I was actually in people's homes doing the home studies, asking the questions, talking about the difficult things that they've experienced in their own past. And what I would tell people is I know that the process feels very intrusive. But Karen, for instance, if I were to come, if you were to find out today that you could not be a parent anymore after next week, what are the things that you would want to know about the people who were then going to parent your children? And I think knowing their names, their ages, and that they're employed is probably not going to be enough as a parent. What do you want to know about these people who are now going to parent your children? You want to know everything. You want to know that these kids are going to be safe. And so it feels intrusive, but think about it from that perspective. We want these children to be safe, and particularly children who have experienced so many hurts in the past. So it's not meant to weed people out. It's not meant to intimidate. But as you said, it is meant to protect the children from further harm.
What sorts of things do you look for? I mean, in that process, what either is warning signs, red flags? I mean, assuming the basic stuff like a criminal record or, you know, evidence of child abuse in the past.
Right. Absolutely. There's a full criminal check, including a CPS check if there was any allegations or substantiations involving child abuse or neglect. But in addition to that, you want to explore a person's own background and what was their childhood like growing up. Did they experience certain kinds of trauma? And if they did, that doesn't automatically, look, we're going to cross you off the list. But what we want to know, well, how did you cope with that? Mm-hmm. Who did you talk to? Who were your supports in that case? That shows something about a person's resilience, about a person's ability to reach out and ask for help. It also will tell you that if their trauma may have been related to maybe an issue that the child who's coming into their home has a similar trauma, are they going to be triggered by that? Or will they have the experience to, they'll be better equipped to handle it? So you do want to talk about people's backgrounds, who their supports are now. Karen had mentioned making sure she had a large community around her. As any parent, adoptive or biological, knows, children wear you out. You know, so who are you going to go to get that?
There.
Yeah. Yes, I have a 21 and 17-year-old. I've lived through two teenagers. Yeah. And so it's difficult. It's very difficult. Who do you call on? Or do you keep things bottled up to yourself? Because chances are with these children in particular, you're going to need some help. Are you capable of reaching out for that? Are you capable of knowing your own limitations? And so it's not even a lot of the process is certainly us getting to know you, but it's also you getting to know yourself and you understanding what you are capable of and not.
What kind of responsibility you're taking.
Right. So you can better say, I can parent this kind of child. Karen said, as a single parent, I can and can't do these certain things. Because some people may walk in the beginning and say, I will take any child, any race, any age, any disability. I can handle anything. Mm-hmm. But once you get to know a little bit about yourself through this process.
Maybe not.
Exactly.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly.
My question is, well, it's, I'm young, and me and my husband, we're a fairly new couple, and, you know, babies are on the horizon. But even when I was younger, I knew that I wanted to adopt because there's just so many kids that need it, you know. And I don't know where to begin. I don't know where to start even to walk down that road to potentially adopt. I don't know who I need to talk to or where I need to go.
We'll try to get you some answers and get you started then, Leslie. Thanks very much for the call and the question, and good luck to you and your husband. Well, who would like to start with that one? Shannon?
Sure. I think there are so many different ways to grow your family, and adoption has so many different journeys. And, you know, what I would recommend first and foremost is to talk to other adoptive parents because they're all going to have their own unique experiences. And I think that hearing the variety in those experiences might help you, as Sandy said, know yourself better, to know what is going to be the right path for your family in terms of the age of the child that you feel might be a good fit for your family, a sibling group versus a single child. You know, I think that in having those conversations with other adoptive parents, you're really going to get a lot of information. And then certainly a lot of agencies, I mean, Children's Bureau in particular does adoption information nights where you can go and just ask questions, get to know what the process is, really start that.
If you are a prospective parent, someone who's interested in doing that, how do you find out about, what's a good way to find out about when those information nights might be? This would be, if we've got a URL or a phone number, this would be a time to drop it.
Sure. We've got information about that on our website at childrensbureau.org. You can always call us as well at 317-545-5281.
Please go ahead and give them that number again. People don't sit by the radio with a pencil.
Absolutely. This is the number for Children's Bureau, and that's 317-545-5281.
And they can also find the information at childrensbureau.org.
Correct.
We've gotten a couple of questions. Go ahead, Sandy.
I was also going to say, on the DCS website, if you just type into your internet browser, adoptachild.in.gov. Mm-hmm. There is information there, and there is an adoption awareness calendar specifically that lists events that we have adoption champions. Adoption champions are people that are adoptive parents themselves, and they do these educational events across the state in different places to just talk to people who are the very first time, just like our caller, not really knowing even where to start. So adoptachild.in.gov and look for the adoption awareness calendar.
We've gotten a couple of questions that are along these lines from listeners who didn't want to go on the air. One of them is, how do adoptees born prior to the time of open adoptions go about finding birth parents? I'm not seeing anyone wanting to leap at that. Sandy?
I'll speak from a personal, as you said, full disclosure, I am an adoptee myself. Mm-hmm. I am what people would call an international adoptee. I was adopted from Panama. I started my search in my heart as a child, I mean, from the very moment that I knew that I was adopted. And what I did when I was in Ohio was I connected with, it was an agency or an organization called Adoption Network Cleveland, which started as just an adoptee taking people in her living room to talk about their searches and the difficulties they were running into. So I would say find other people. There are groups out there. There are advocacy groups. There are people who are doing legislative work to look for that. First thing I would do is start with the Indiana Department of Health, the Indiana State Department of Health, ISDH. Mm-hmm. I think it'd probably be isdh.in.gov, and they hold any records that are available, be they redacted or whatever that is. If you start there, there's an inquiry process through that agency. But mostly I would talk to people and search out advocacy and support groups. There are people out there who have learned how to navigate those things.
And then the other question is, what are some good first steps to begin a search? It sounds like starting with those is the best approach.
For Indiana, I definitely start with the Department of Health and the information on that website.
And let's step back and take Leslie's question. Karen, in terms of, at one point you were where she is, trying to figure out, okay, how do I start this process? You know, from someone who's been down the road, has done that journey, what's the best way for a prospective parent to get started, do you think? What are practical steps that either you learned or?
I started finding people that had adopted already. I started there, like with my church. We have an e-board, and I put it out there, hey, has anybody adopted? Where did you go? What did you do? And then we just talked with them about it. Then I talked to friends as well. Then I went to the library and got lots of books on ADHD and, you know, trauma and reactive attachment disorder and different things like that I might run across, and looked at those as well and read that information to see, do I really want to get into this? I am single, so do I really want to go down this path? I mean, I didn't want to break anyone's hearts. I did not want to cause those children any more trauma. So I knew if I was going to do this, I had to be committed the whole way through.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Sandy Caesar of the Indiana Department of Child Services, Shannon Brannick of the Children's Bureau of Indianapolis, and adoptive mom Karen Sauer. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about adoption today. My guests are Sandy Caesar, the Indiana Department of Child Services, Shannon Brannick, the Children's Bureau of Indianapolis, and Karen Sauer, an adoptive mom. Rhonda, welcome to the program. Rhonda,
Hi.
Welcome to the program.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I was wondering if there are any rules or regulations against adoptive parents who decide that they just aren't equipped to be parents and decide to put their children back into the system, and how often does that happen, and what's done with the children as far as emotional support?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Rhonda. Well, that's a horrible situation. I think we'll all agree. It's not good for anybody, least of all the child. Does it happen, Sandy?
Unfortunately, it does. Here in Indiana, we have a post-adopt services.
Mm-hmm.
We have post-adopt services. We are actually contracted with three agencies who handle different regions of the state. Children's Bureau Shannon is in charge of one of the programs. They're at Children's Bureau. And I would say we definitely have people who come to us feeling that that's where they are, that I can't do this anymore, that this is the end. And that when they come into the program, a lot of times that's where they are. The purpose of our program is to try and preserve that family. Certainly when we get our children into an adoptive home, the goal of adoption is that they are your child now forever and ever, you know, till death do us part. I like to quote marriage vows on that, because that's mm-hmm. what it is, and it should be a committed relationship.
It's a lifetime commitment.
It is. And this child now who you have adopted becomes your blood. For mm-hmm. all intents and purposes, that you gave birth to that child now once that adoption has finalized. And so we do realize, like I said, that the children come into the system with issues and challenges that are going to be different than perhaps a child that you gave birth to, but your commitment to them needs to be the same. Hopefully you will be able to find something through the post-adopt services that will help to preserve that family. We will try to, actually, I probably should let Shannon speak to that since she
Well, and it would seem to me, if I could step in for just a second, it would also seem to me that that's the answer to some of the earlier questions we've gotten to, which is, this is a serious commitment. It's a lifetime thing. That's why you're going to be put through some paces on the front end, because the consequences on the back end, particularly for the child, are not good at all. Shannon, could you talk a little bit about, I would think, in that situation, the sense of rejection that the child must have has just got to be overwhelming.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that when we see families seek out post-adoption services, oftentimes these families do feel very isolated. They're experiencing a lot of stress in their household. They are kind of throwing their hands up in the air saying, I don't know what to do. And so what we do with post-adoption services is really to come alongside that family and try to provide support. Providing support for the parent who might be dealing with some really challenging behaviors, but also providing support for that child who is struggling in that adoptive home. We have a number of support groups all throughout the state because as I said, these families sometimes do feel isolated because parenting an adopted child can be different than parenting a biological child. And so being able to connect with other families that are experiencing some of those same challenges can really validate your experience. It can be really empowering to be able to share ideas, advice, and just support, cry on each other's shoulders. That really can provide families with a lot of strength. But then the family is also able to work with a social worker that's going to, help connect them with resources, whether that's family therapy, whether that's individual counseling for the child. Maybe that child is struggling in school, and so we can help put some supports in place in that school so that the child has the resources they need to be successful.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. And I will say we're getting a lot of calls, so I'm going to ask both callers and our guests to try to, I want to get as many of these as possible, to try to be somewhat succinct in the answers, questions and answers if possible. Danielle, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I wanted to address, I was adopted through the Children's Bureau here in Indianapolis way back before the open adoption records and such, and I had never really had an idea to find my birth parents, and then one day I was just sort of bored and on the internet, and I got on this adoption.com website, and my birthday and hospital and city were listed, baby girl and everything on this, like my birth mother was actually looking for me through these other websites, and we were able to connect, and that was a really emotional experience. Both, for us and for my family, for my adoptive family. That was really hard for them, too. But there's, some different ways to find your birth parents through the internet these days, which I find, amazing.
I'm hoping that when you say it was an emotional experience, that it was a good emotional experience.
It was. And we keep in touch, but, I think my parents were mostly really worried that she was going to want to be a huge part of my life now. And, they were just worried about a whole lot of different things, like I was going to love her more. And that is not at all the situation. We keep in touch through Facebook, and, if there's something important, we email, or if there's a medical issue, I can ask her. And that, for me, has been the most mind-easing thing, that if I have like a medical question, like, hey, is there breast cancer in the family line, I can just ask her and she'll be able to give me that answer. So things like that have eased my mind, and it eases my mind for my family, my son, and future children as well.
Danielle, thank you very much for calling and sharing your story with us. Really appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having me.
Certainly. Well, that is one of the things, I guess, Karen, as the adoptive parent here, as part of the group, do you feel any insecurity? I mean, would something like that threaten you, what Danielle talks about?
No, actually, because we've had that already.
Okay.
Nev has some half-siblings in Ohio that contacted us. I found a letter when I was going through her paperwork after the adoption, and they talked about the sisters, and they wanted to know how she was doing and all of that. And I did contact them, and they have a relationship. And my reason for that was, while Nev was pulled from a really bad situation, she had a lot of good. They told her a lot of good stories of when they played and things that they did together. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was important for her to know it wasn't all bad.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Question would be this. How common of a practice is it for the adoptive parent to never tell the adoptive child about their adoption? And if it is common, maybe some of the reasons, more common reasons that the parents have for not telling the child, outside of, possible danger to the child, that sort of thing. Just wasn't sure. I experienced that, and I've always kind of wondered, why.
You experienced it in what way, Scott?
I didn't find out till I was about 22 years old, and I didn't find out from my adoptive mother. I had to find out a different way, And so I've always kind of tried to understand why that happened. And first, I just want to know, is this pretty common? I mean, do a lot of adoptive parents not tell?
Thanks very much for the call, and thank you also, Scott, for sharing your story with us. Well, Sandy, you were shaking your head vigorously there with that.
I don't have stats on that. I couldn't answer from a study. I would certainly hope it is not common. And when I was working as an adoption social worker in Ohio, working with families who were adopting infants from voluntary situations, we certainly encouraged them to have some degree of openness. We encouraged them to talk. You know, I used to do a training where I would say, talk about adoption like spaghetti dinner. You normalize it. So it's not a shock. It's not a, it's just, you know, this is what it is. This is my family's put together through adoption. You need to make it very, very normal, because any shrouding of mystery around it is going to make it seem bad. And then children internalize that. Children internalize messages about their birth parents as bad. So Karen, I love her response about wanting her child to know that there was good there. If you say something about a birth parent that is bad, the child will internalize it that you mean that about them. Mm-hmm. They will take it that way. Certainly in DCS, in adoptions from foster care, children are coming into the system at ages mostly that they know what's going on. They understand it. They remember their mother.
Mm-hmm.
So telling them they're adopted a lot of times is kind of a moot issue. And so you have to find a way to deal with that. Again, I just love Karen's response that I'm your mother. I love you. This is where you came from, and there's good to that too, because it's led up to who you are now. I love you because of where you came from, because of, you know, birth mom, you've got her beautiful blue eyes, whatever that is, to make this positive. So I don't believe that it's common, and I certainly would hope that it is not. I think at the time that I was adopted back in the 70s, it certainly was common social work practice to not talk about it, to hide it, to keep it under the rug. But
why was that? Because I would think if you've got, you know, trust is such an important issue in parenting, withholding a key piece of information like that, I would think, is not going to enhance trust.
I think that we do what we feel is best at the time. And since that time, we've learned better. Mm-hmm. And the more you know, when you know better, you do better. I can't speak to that. And I was very lucky in my own personal situation that my mother was very progressive in her thinking and never bought into that. She felt in her mind, if it were me, I would want to know. So that's how I'm going to approach this with my child. But we know better now, the damaging effects that that can have on a child.
Karen, I want to ask, you know, it's clear you're very enthusiastic, very committed to being a parent and all of that. But as a parent myself, I can tell, I'm a parent who just absolutely loves his kids and can't imagine not being a father. There are hard moments, though. There are challenges that come with it, even though it is incredibly worthwhile. Just in terms of your experience, what was the hardest thing about becoming an adoptive mom, the most challenging piece of it?
Punishment. Giving consequences.
There's yours.
Giving consequences because, you know, you already know that they've been passed around and having to learn all kinds of new rules and new ideas at all the different places. My kids were in like 5 or 6 different foster homes each before I got them. So there was a lot of that. And I always felt really bad. Oh my gosh, I'm giving them a consequence when I just brought them here and they haven't got a chance to learn me or my house or the rules and all of that. So then I just felt like more of an ogre type mother than that. I do try to be very vocal and excited about it, probably too much. They've only been with me for 2 years, so maybe that hasn't wore off yet. Maybe in a few years it will. But, you know, it's funny because people always say that you're changing the lives of these two kids, but really they're not. The kids are changing my life because I really can't imagine coming home and not having them there now. I can't imagine some of the things that I could have missed out on with them if they weren't there.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. Katie, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Is that me?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's probably Kate.
That's okay.
Yes.
I was calling. I'm an adoptive mom, and I'm a part of a group called Indiana Families for Adoption, Community, and Education. And we put together social events for adoptive families, and educational events. And we've done an overnight camp at Flat Rock YMCA camp, and I just wanted to make sure people knew about it.
And if people wanted to find out more about your organization, how would they go about that?
They can find us on Facebook. It's hard to find us by our acronym, which is IFACE. But if they put in Indiana Families for Adoption, it'll come up eventually.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the call, and thank you very much for the work you're doing, Kate.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thanks.
And I'm going to throw it back to Karen here as the one who is on the front lines here. If there were any way we could change the adoption system to create more support for adoptive parents and the children, what would that be? What would help you the most right now from where you are? Or would have helped you at a key point in the process?
I think just getting the word out there that there are more support, there are more groups, there are more people that have been through the situation. In order to be a foster parent, you have to have so many hours every year. Mm-hmm. And going to some of these classes at Children's Bureau and hearing other families talking about stories with their kids and consequences and things, it was really kind of enlightening because it was like hearing the same story of my son or my daughter, but through somebody else. So not feeling like I was isolated, I think is really important. And a lot of times I don't think that the word gets out there enough because people don't really talk about adoption like I feel they should. I try to talk at every conversation, pass the salt. Hey, did you know I adopted? Or something like that in there. And I really try to be vocal about it and try to build networks because I think you need that as well. And I think that maybe if we put more billboards up or things and just let people know that it is out there, I think that would help a lot.
Who do you talk with about your parenting challenges?
A lot of times I try to talk to my mom or my sisters. And I find out that my sister is going through the same thing. Her kids are the same age. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because I think that it should be a certain way. And they're like, my son is doing the same thing. That's not special to your child or something there. I do try to talk to them a little bit. But as Shannon will tell you, I send her lots of emails and people at Children's Bureau. Hey, what about this and things? So I try to do it that way.
Shannon, I imagine there are going to be some people who have been listening to this program and are going to have questions about how they should get started or explore the idea of being an adoptive parent. Let's give them the URL and the phone number again real quickly. And Sandy, I'm going to ask you to do the same thing.
Sure. You can find out information about Children's Bureau Adoption Program at www.childrensbureau.org. And the phone number is 317-545-5281.
Okay. And Sandy?
The adoption page on the DCS Homes website is adoptachild.in.gov. And if you prefer to talk to people, you could call 1-888-25-ADOPT, and that will connect you with one of our adoption specialists who can get you some information.
And how long a conversation is that normally if they call?
Oh, my gosh. I've had adoption specialists tell me that they can be on the phone for an hour and a half with a family who's calling. And, it depends on what kinds of questions they have right off the bat, too.
That will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Sandy Caesar, Shannon Brannick, and Karen Sauer. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.